Greetings, fellow listeners. You are about to listen to the podcast version of the Naked American Songbook from WNYC. Due to bizarrely antiquated copyright law, we can't play the complete recordings of the very songs we're discussing. Highly illogical, I know. Alas, the show must go on, and you can hear my conversation with Zachary Quinto and at least get a taste of the music that he loves. All right, Trekkies and or music lovers, unbuckle up. As far as sharing music is concerned, has anything ever matched the charm of the mixtape? Certainly, the lost art of hosting a sing-along around the family's piano made for a gemütlich way to pass a summer evening in 1891, and gathering around the old Victrola or the turntable or the 8-track has made for some cozy times from time to time. Even the mix CD has its place, what with its pristine sound and ability to travel. But the mixtape was unique in that, like a CD, it was portable, but unlike a CD, it was incredibly hard to make. The hours spent slaving over a hot double cassette machine, Google it, kids, added immeasurably to its value in a way that just texting a Spotify playlist never will. Furthermore, the mixtape would eventually wear out or just disintegrate. Sharing a mixtape was a rite of passage, a humble, heartfelt coup de sharing that was both plugged in to the public zeitgeist of popular music, but was also private, intimate, and often searingly vulnerable. If someone went to the trouble to go and make you a mixtape, you knew that you meant something to them. And if you got one in return, well, Katie, bar the door, as my late mother used to say. God rest her soul. Now, what if your tape was the same as theirs? What if the secret songs you'd taken the time to share with them were the same secret songs that they had taken the time to share with you? Well, Katie barred the door and knocked me over with a feather. That is basically, my friends, what happened on this episode of the Naked American Songbook. When I asked my guest, Zach Quinto, to send me the mixtape of songs that meant the most to him, little could I have known they'd be the same songs that I'd have chosen. It was uncanny. Zach's list was a mirror image of my own. It was like I was looking in a mirror. So to celebrate this harmonic convergence, this magic mirroring of musical moments, let's get this party started with an artist who's on everyone's mixtape, the late, great Michael Jackson. Make that change, kids. This is the Naked American Songbook.
Somebody make that change.
I'm gonna make that change, I promise. That was Michael Jackson's global anthem of transformation, written by Glenn Ballard and Syeda Garrett, backed up by the Winans and the Andre Crouch Choir, produced by the one and only Quincy Jones. It's one of the great pop tunes of the last 50 years, and we use it today because I feel like I'm looking in the mirror at my guest for this episode of the Naked American Songbook, actor, producer, and as it turns out, singer and hoofer, Zachary Quinto.
Hello, Julian.
Zach, obviously everybody knows you primarily for playing the role of Spock in the recent reboot of the Star Trek series, but they may not know that as a boy in Pittsburgh, so we understand, you were in the musical theater.
You know, sometimes rumors are true. I did get my start in a performing group in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where I'm from, called the Mini Stars, Civic Light Opera Mini Stars. And yeah, we were known to belt out a medley or two.
Really? So you're a singer?
I was a singer. I don't consider myself a singer now.
Can you sing?
I can carry a tune, but I have not.
You won two Gene Kelly Awards.
I just won one, I think. I was nominated for two. I won one.
Oh, I see. But
who's
it's an honor
counting?
Just to be nominated.
Sure. Especially for a Gene Kelly Award.
For what?
Well, Gene Kelly Awards are the awards for high school musical theater excellence. So I was...
Is this just in the Pittsburgh
area? It's just in Pittsburgh.
Because I didn't get one.
No, just in Pittsburgh. Named after Gene Kelly, who's a native of Pittsburgh.
Is he really?
Yeah. It's a Civic Light Opera thing. CLO is pretty big in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, first of all, is a very... I don't know that a lot of people would know, it's a very cultural city. There's a lot of opportunities for young artists to train and study and learn there. And so I took advantage of that as a kid, and I enrolled in the Civic Light Opera Academy of Musical Theater, studied acting and singing, and then performed with this group as well. But my Kelly Award experience was very separate. That was in high school. I was nominated for playing the Major General in Pirates of Penzance.
Please sing a couple bars of that.
I won for that. I don't even remember. I am the very modern major general. I have information animal and mineral.
I know the something. And I know the place historical from something else.
Something else.
Satigy.
Edgy, yeah. Totally.
Wrong verse.
You're pretty good. You should.
I was in the Pirates of Penzance too, not that you asked.
What did you play and when?
I was the cabin boy. As you can well imagine.
I'm sorry I missed that.
You are sorry you missed it. That was a cabin boy for the ages.
But I took home the statue for that portrayal, and the next year I played John Adams in 1776, and I was nominated, but I did not win.
Wow.
That was a crushing blow.
I put
shoe polish in my hair to play the old man.
Oh, for the Major General?
To play that role, white shoe polish.
White shoe polish?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know they had that sort of thing.
It's a thing. And like these big mutton chop things.
Wow.
Yeah.
You'll say a better major general has never strategy.
You'll say a better major general has never strategy. You'll say a better major general has never strategy.
Zach, I mean, what are you? What are you doing? How do you think about yourself? There are no right answers. You know that. Nor are there wrong.
I think I'm actually figuring that out as we speak.
Right now?
Yeah. I'm in a transitional time in my life in a lot of ways, I think. For the better, all good stuff.
That's very trendy. A lot of people are transitioning right now. The law is moving in your favor, so the timing is right.
I can use whatever bathroom I want. I feel like, you know, I came to my work as an actor, but then subsequently I produce as well. But now, I don't know. I gotta figure it out.
Really? So, you were acting as a little boy.
Yeah, I've been acting since I was 10.
Was the musical theater like the gateway drug for you into music and songs? And because I know that you care deeply about the songs in your life.
I do, and I use them a lot in my creative process, whatever that may be, whether as an actor or a writer. I mean, I listen to a lot of music in conjunction with
Like you play
with
a sad song right before you'd play a sad scene?
Sometimes. I make playlists sometimes for projects that I'm working on, whether they're directly correlating to a scene or just a character or just a project in general. You know, if I'm developing a project as a producer, I'll make a playlist comprised of songs that tonally match what I think that project wants to be. I'll share that playlist with directors or writers or if I'm acting out. I mean, if I know I have to go in and play an emotional scene, I'll certainly listen to music that evokes whatever emotions I need to access in that day or in that experience.
Wow.
I don't think I'm alone in that.
I thought that was cheating.
Whatever it takes, you know? There are no rules.
I'm probably a harder core actor.
Yeah, probably. Probably true.
So where on what playlist does this first song that you chose, which just blew my mind because I love it so much.
Yeah.
Where does this show up on your on the playlist of your life?
This is a song that I first heard when I was young, when I was a kid. A lot of these songs, I would say, probably have origins to my youth or, you know, younger years, my formative years in some way or another. It was made famous by Sammy Davis Jr., someone that I've always been really enamored of. I've loved him as a performer since I could remember seeing him.
What are you going to do about Sammy Davis Jr.?
What are you going to do? It's just like, what? And he was such a consummate artist. I mean, he was performing from the time he could walk, he was tapping. And, you know,
he got a Gene Kelly, actually.
He probably did get a Gene Kelly. He probably hung with Gene Kelly more times than we could count.
Yeah, swinging in the rain. Ooh, la, 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 la.
But this is a song that says so much. I mean, first of all, it's such a story song, mm-hmm. which I love. It's so evocative, and I think the experience of the singer is so tangible and palpable and relatable, even though it's not. And then, so the meta quality is like, this is a song that Sammy Davis Jr. performed throughout his career. And if you go on YouTube and look this song up, there are so many mind-blowing versions of it.
Of him doing it.
In concert,
you know, yeah.
The first and most evocative for me is probably, I think it's in the 70s, but he is wearing this like skin-tight, one-piece, mm-hmm. unitard, brown, full-on moose knuckle situation, like coming out.
Refer to the show page, friends.
Yeah. Exactly. But really, like, you know, in his prime, and he performs it and has this air. But then you can watch him, like, at the end of his life, in his final concert. This is one of the songs he performs. And for me, watching those, I've just been so inspired by his connection to his artistry, his commitment to all of his work. But particularly this song, I think, embodies that. And mm-hmm. it's something that when I discovered it, I fell into this YouTube wormhole with it probably about 6 years ago. I was living in New York. I was doing a play, and I don't know how I stumbled on it, but I had known the song very well and always loved the song. But once I had found these videos, it was like an endless tunnel of inspiration for me to just watch him in different environments, performing to crowds of different sizes, mm-hmm. performing to crowds in Japan, performing to crowds on television. That combined with the song itself, it's just really moving to me. I find it really moving.
I just want to second everything you just said, and I think it was about 6 years ago, too, that I fell down the same wormhole looking at the Sammy Davis Jr. videos of the song Mr. Bojangles, which a lot of people don't realize was written in the 70s. Mm-hmm. It was a nitty-gritty dirt band hit, and somehow he found his way to it, and for all these obvious reasons, his connections to Bill Robinson and to the character in the song he's singing about and how he embodies all
those
layers.
The way he embodies it, you know, like when he's talking about his dog, what he's talking about, God. Being drunk. I mean, there's just so much about it that's like he physicalizes it in a way. I actually didn't know it was a Nitty Gritty Dirt Band song, to be honest with you.
I knew a man, Bojangles, and he danced for you in worn out shoes, silver hair and ragged shirt and baggy pants, the old soft shoes. He jumped so.
I knew that he didn't, like, I knew it wasn't his song, but just the way he physicalizes it and characterizes it, it's just such a prime example, I think, of genius performer at the top of their game, bringing something to life in a really meaningful way, you know, in a way that has a lasting impact, as evidenced by the fact that you and I have been obsessed with it for the last 6 years.
Lord, when he shook his head and the way he operaizes it.
Yeah, oh, that voice.
It's incredible. So let's not deny our listeners the pleasure of this song.
Listeners of the Naked American Songbook.
I'm naked.
Am I?
Yes.
Should I be?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't get that in the memo.
It's in the title, Zach.
Okay. I'll be right back. Okay. Please let me disrobe. And while I'm gone, enjoy the musical stylings of Sammy Davis Jr. and Mr. Bojangles. Thank you.
He said, I dance now at every chance and honky tonk for my drinks and chips. Most of the time I spend behind these county bars. You see, son, I drinks a bit. Then he shook his head. Someone say, please, please. That's Mr. Bojangles. Call him Mr. Bojangles. Mr. Bojangles, come back and dance. Dance, dance, please dance. Mr. Bojangles. Mr. Bojangles, dance. Come back and dance again. Please, Bojangles.
That was recorded at a casino in northern Germany for a comeback concert. Mr. Bojangles, a country song that Sammy Davis Jr. makes his own.
It gets you.
It really does.
Mm-hmm. That's actually not a version that I'm familiar with, to be honest. I haven't heard that one.
Well, I encourage our listeners to check them all out because different moments and different performances. It's sad that there isn't one authoritative studio recording.
Yeah.
You know, where he would have had an orchestra like he had 10 years before he started doing this.
Right. This was more of like a concert show.
Yeah. Such an emotional journey.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's it. Sammy Davis Jr. was exactly a journeyman, and the song embodies that so perfectly. He really goes, in this version of it, he really goes into that character, especially when he's...
Yeah.
Behind the county bars.
But, yeah, he's got the two voices.
Yeah.
And then at the end, they seem to almost merge a little bit. Like, is he the narrator or is he the character?
Totally.
And there's other recordings by other artists. Nina Simone has one, which is great and beautiful. Mm-hmm. I think Robbie Williams, which is terrible. Like, you don't want to hear him sing that song.
He said, I dance now and every chance in honky tonks for my drinks and tips. But most of the time I spend behind these county bars. You see, sunlight, I drink some beer.
Not necessarily.
It doesn't exactly make sense.
Yeah.
Whatever. The
master.
The very best. And it's funny, I came to him late in life, relatively speaking, personally. And I don't know why or when you came to Sammy Davis Jr.
I just came to him as a kid. I remember Candyman. I remember he was, you know, it was...
But he came through the television, not through the radio.
He came through the television for me. Yeah for sure.
Variety shows.
Yes, variety shows. These are the post-Rat Pack era when they were all doing their own thing. And also he was kind of more kid-oriented, actually, for a minute there. You know, some of those songs that he did were geared in that vein. And I think that's how I picked up on him. But I've always been really connected to him for some reason.
I love that because a lot of people, and I want to thank you for this, come to Sammy Davis Jr. as a joke. You know, as an easy mark, someone's fun to parody.
I know to you, I may look old. Hope this statement ain't too bold, but here comes the judge. Here comes the judge. Here comes the judge.
But that's only because he was so great and so indelible.
Sure.
All of his qualities are so easy to recognize. He's a real original. Anyway,
really, true.
I could listen to him all day long.
Me too.
We're not gonna, because we're gonna move on. We're gonna move on to your next Titanic choice. I just want to know all about your relationship to Joni Mitchell.
Well, who doesn't have a profound relationship with Joni Mitchell? And it was very difficult for me to narrow down, is it Free Man in Paris? Is it something from Blue? Any of the songs from Blue? I chose this song because I think it speaks most directly to the kind of longing that her poetry evokes in me. And the kind of incisiveness that I think she can really possess both lyrically and musically. This is a song called Down to You, which is essentially a song for me about our relationship to ourselves and to how we navigate our own journey and our own mortality and our own process of aging and our own process of growing in our lives. And it starts out in this achingly beautiful way, kind of commenting on the ephemeral nature of things in life. Everything comes and goes, from lovers to styles of clothes, you know, and the impermanence of things. And then it kind of goes deeper and deeper as the song goes on to this kind of messiness and this human longing and what it is about us that drives us into the streets and looking for companionship and connection and finding it wherever we can. And that ultimately the beauty is that everything does come down to us and ourselves, and I think it is just an exquisite expression of human nature, as all of her songs are.
It's like the Joni Mitchell filter is permanently over this lens. It'll always be the filter.
Yeah, well, she also, I just think she represents such a purity of creative expression, you know, especially at this time.
And it's a fearlessness.
Fearlessness and an absolute unwillingness to conform or to in any way, you know, and the way that she could take
Why
didn't
you even think she thought about conforming? She just made
what
she had to make.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
If it was trendy, terrific. If it wasn't, fine.
Yeah,
she was making what she was making. So let's listen.
Yeah, totally. I love this album.
Everything comes and goes, marked by lovers and styles of clothes. Things that you held high and told yourself were true, lost or changing as the days come down to you, down to you. Constant stranger, you're a kind person, you're a cold person too. It's down to you. Station craving warmth and beauty. You settle for less than fascination. A few drinks later, you're not so choosy. When the closing lights strip off the shadows on this strange new flesh you found, clutching the night to you like a fig leaf, you hurry to the blackness and the blankets to lay down an impression, and you're alone. Against a stranger and you both apologize. Old friends seem indifferent, you must have brought that on. Old bonds have broken down.
Love is gone.
Ooh, love is gone. Written on your spirit, this sad song.
If you are just joining us, I am Julian Fleischer, host of the Naked American Songbook, and my naked guest, looking good over there, is Zach Quinto, who brought that song for us to think about today. And, you know, you're bumming me out. That's two that's two tough songs in a row.
I feel like I'm in a contemplative, kind of reflective moment.
Really not until today did I ever think that she was singing to me.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, it was always someone else, some
guy.
Yeah.
Oh.
Your remarks made me think like...
Yeah. I always thought she was singing to me.
Well, that's just one key difference. It's like Toni Morrison, you know, pulling the reader into the narrative, if I may say so.
I think it's beautiful, as all of her songs are. I came to Joni Mitchell, I remember I was in college. I went to college in Pittsburgh at Carnegie Mellon, and we were taking a trip to New York for a weekend, a car full of us in my senior year. And somebody was like, oh, I want to play this album. And it's called Blue, Joni Mitchell. And I was like, oh, Jesus, I don't want to. Who's this Joni Mitchell bullshit? And by the time I heard it through, I just felt like something had happened to me. Like I had experience something like I never felt before by listening to an album. I was surprised. I was challenged. I was moved. I was, you know, it was so, and then I just dove in headlong to everything. Earlier stuff, I would say, for me is more appealing than some of the more experimental jazzy stuff she did later in the 80s. And
oh, well, you're going to love the second half of this program.
But then, you know, even down to that album she did in, what was it, like 1999? Both Sides Now, when she did the orchestral reimagining of her music. And, you know, when her voice had dropped 5 octaves and, you know, she was like growling it out. And I actually saw that, I saw that concert at the Greek Theater in Los Angeles. I just, yeah, I've just always been like blown away by her and her history and what she was a part of, that movement in the 70s in LA and the sort of Geffen moment and Laurel Canyon vibes and all of that stuff was so romantic to me. Mm-hmm. And I lived in LA after college, so I felt like, you know, I had some sense of inspiration from her music and the music of those people, Jackson Browne and, you know, that gang.
Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Stills, the Eagles. Young.
Yeah, all of those.
Linda Ronstadt.
Love Linda Ronstadt. She almost made my list. But
not for me. With love to lead the way.
The aria you just gave me about Down to You was pretty impressive. And I have to say, if I may, once again, eerily mirrors my own experience. In a car with my sister. She puts on a record. It was not Blue. It was For the Roses, which came right after Blue. It was sort of a similar
vibe. Love that one.
Driving into town with a dark cloud above you, guiding the number who's bound to love you. Oh, honey, you turn me on. I'm the radio.
And once again, like, by the time I got out of the car, I was a changed person.
Yeah.
And then thus starts a lifetime of growing, using her DNA.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just my parents, but hers. That's how I feel. Yeah. You know, like I can't. I introduced her to my ex.
Did you?
It was pretty powerful. And even now, 25 years later.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it's the nature of what she captured, I think, in a lot of ways.
He tried to do the same thing with Dylan, and it didn't take. I was like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
So I want to play for you a Joni tune that may be a little more up-tempo.
Okay, great.
And because we are the Jonathan Channel and there's a lot of Great American Songbook stuff going on here, and Joni is played here all the time, I'm interested in her life as a jazz singer. Because, man, she could sing jazz.
She sure could.
Like nobody's business. And in fact, if you would only come to her through some of those jazzier tracks, you'd think, oh, maybe that's Annie Ross, you know. That's, you know, just a really groovy, cool, relaxed, swinging chick, as it were.
Right,
which is a term I think she wouldn't mind. We're going to play, for my own purposes, The Dry Cleaner from Des Moines. Do you know this track?
Mm-mm.
This is a song by Charlie Mingus.
Mm-hmm.
You probably know that she has a record called Mingus.
Yeah.
Arguably the greatest bass player our nation ever produced, up there with all the greats. And when he was in decline, he turned to Joni Mitchell to help him lyricized some of his tunes. He was looking for a collaborator, and he chose Joni Mitchell. I mean, it's crazy, because the guy was a really out there bop lion. You know, his stuff is really challenging. And some of his tunes are super hard. When I started with Joni, it was like down the rabbit hole. It never came out. Whatever she put out, I was religiously devoted to.
Yeah.
So this album has a lot of crazy stuff on it, not received well. Now, of course, however many years later, it's an iconic album. So this is called The Dry Cleaner from Des Moines. It's quick, it's funny, it's smart, and she sings the crap out of it. So come with me now as we go to Las Vegas.
I am to her all the times, stuck in a spot that's hot. I keep hearing bells all around me, jingle in the lucky jackpots. They keep you tantalized, they keep you reaching for your wallet here in Fool's Paradise. I talked to a cat from Des Moines. Ran a cleaning plan. That cat was clanking with coin. Well, he must have had a genie in a lamp, cause every time I dropped a dime, I blew it. He kept ringing bells, nothing to it. He only got 3 oranges, 3 lemons, 3 cherries, 3 plums. I'm losing my taste for fruit, watching the dry cleaner do it. Like Midas in a poly.
circus, circus, where the cowgirls fill the room with their big balloons. The cleaner was pitching with her piss. He had dinos and Pooh Bears and lions, pink and blue there. He couldn't lose them.
Cleaner from Des Moines could put a coin in the door of a John and get 20 for one. I mean, come on. It's so hip.
She wrote all this stuff for his music.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. And then she sings it like it's, you know, nothing. And that's Jaco Pastorius on the bass, who was her great collaborator in the 70s. Insane stuff. I mean, the guy's so out of control. She found in Jaco a great collaborator in the 70s and 80s because she said she was always looking for a bass player who wouldn't play picket fences. She always had this weird poetic way of talking. Anyway, so thus concludes the Joni Mitchell worship section
of the show. We could stay here forever.
We really could stay here forever, and I don't want to.
Oh, come on. Live a little on the edge, guys.
Okay, so you regular listeners know that I would be more than happy to spend the whole rest of the show just playing Joni Mitchell tunes. However, we have more of Zach's music to hear, including one of the cassette tapes he wore out as a kid. I'm Julian Fleischer, and this is the Naked American Songbook. If you're just joining us, my name is Julian Fleischer. It's hot in here, so we got naked early. My guest is Zachary Quinto, actor, producer, singer, and banjo player.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
What?
I started playing the banjo about 3 years ago. There's a lot of downtime when I'm working. There's a lot of time that is just spent sort of idly on set. And
Between shots.
Between shots and, in makeup, whatever it is. And I had gotten to a place where I felt like I was wasting a lot of that time. It's difficult for me when I'm on set, when I'm working, it's difficult for me to immerse myself fully in another activity. Like, I can't do something that requires my full attention. It's difficult for me to read on set because you never know when you're going to have to put down the book. So, it's why I think a lot of people knit. You know, you can do a crossword puzzle, and I did a lot of that stuff. But I felt like it wasn't necessarily anything that was tangibly productive. And I'd always wanted to play the banjo. And so about three and a half years ago, I was starting a job and I decided that I was going to make that a part of it. And I took it to work with me and I started teaching myself first online. And then eventually I got a teacher and now I kind of go everywhere with it. You know, I'm not great. I'm no Steve Martin, but I love it. And it's a great meditative exercise. And I've certainly gotten better. And the interesting thing is eventually I got brave enough to start bringing it from my trailer to set. And I was very nervous at first because I really didn't want people to think I was some kind of, I don't know, douchebag. So I did it very timidly at first. And I would just sort of sit in the corner and pluck out the tune I was learning.
Like this is on the bridge of the Enterprise?
Yeah. At first it was in an American Horror Story asylum. So it was in the bowels of this horrifying, terrible set. It was an amazing set. And then eventually, people started coming up to me, like crew members, and being like, hey, thanks for keeping us, it was such a pleasing sound.
It is. And so evocative.
And so, so I just kept it up. And
really? So are you a plucker or a strummer?
I'm a plucker. I learned
another plucker.
Bluegrass style. I haven't made my way to clawhammer yet, but we'll see.
Now, it's pretty easy to play, right?
No, it's really not. It's really easy.
I'm just trying to shed the feelings of threat that I feel, my own incredible insecurity. That seems like a reasonable segue into Graceland.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
So somehow. Is there a similar part of you that gets plucked by that kind of music?
I mean, Simon and Garfunkel, another huge influence on my adolescence and Bridge Over Troubled Water and Bleecker Street. And I mean, I similarly just, when I was younger and I found somebody musically that I loved, I just, you know, and that was in the day and age of CDs, and I would just buy every CD I could get my hands on. Mm-hmm. And
don't you agree that
excessively
that owning the artifact itself contributes to its meaning?
Yeah, for sure. And also the thing is now about music is like you lose music now because, you know, it doesn't transfer when you get a new computer, it doesn't upload to the cloud, or you forget, you know, with CDs, they were always there. You know, your collection was your collection. It was a tangible thing. And now your collection is on whatever device you happen to have with you at the time.
If you're lucky. People are always like, oh, it's not.
Totally. And now Spotify and Tidal. And, you know, it's like the sort of mass, the deluge of access to this creative content has made it less meaningful in a lot of ways, you know, and it lasts in the public consciousness for a less amount of time. You know, things are just moving so much faster. But I really fell headlong into Simon and Garfunkel as well. But for me, Graceland, it came to it at the end of high school. It stayed with me. I remember I took this road trip when I was just out of college. I had been living in L.A. for about 10 months, and I came back to Pittsburgh to do a play, and I drove the whole way by myself. And I remember driving through the Badlands and playing this song as I was driving through this landscape that I've never seen anything like it before, and just listening to this whole album. And I was specifically like, oh, what am I going to listen to as I head into the Badlands? And this was the song that I chose, and then listened to the rest of the album. But this is the first song on the album, sets the tone for, it's much more uplifting than some of the other stuff that I've brought to you today. So I think it's a good selection.
Ladies and gentlemen, Graceland.
Delta was shining like a national guitar. I am following the river down the highway through the cradle of the Civil War. I'm going to Graceland, Graceland, to Memphis, Tennessee. I'm going to Graceland. Poor boys and pilgrims with families, and we are going to Graceland.
See, my reaction to this album was, Joni Mitchell did this 10 years earlier.
Oh, interesting.
And she didn't get half the praise. And he won like a fistful of Grammys.
This was the album that he did with Ladysmith Black Mambazo as well, which I think was part of that attention.
She had recorded the warrior drums from Burundi 10 years earlier and put it on.
But this was at like the height of apartheid and when, you know, that political movement was really...
You're right about that. He was right about that, if not much else. I'm Julian Fleischer. This is the Naked American Songbook, and I hope you've been enjoying this deep and penetrating conversation with the tall, dark, and handsome Zachary Quinto. But before we get back to more of my chat with him, I'm interested in chatting with you. That's right, dear listeners, I could sit here all day kibitzing with attractive, famous people about the songs that mean the most to them, but what matters most to me is what matters most to you, listeners. So pick up those phones and get onto the Naked American listener line at 347-229-1343. That's 347-229-1343. And tell me what songs you'd most like to share with the rest of us here on the air. And importantly, don't forget to tell us what kind of undies you're wearing while you're listening to it. And in just a minute, we will get back to my conversation with Zachary Quinto. I'm Julian Fleischer. This is the Naked American Songbook. And now back to my conversation with Zachary Quinto, where we are about to play a varsity level round of This or That.
This or That.
Okay. I'm nervous.
Why?
Because I'm naked.
Come on.
Just kidding.
That's my goal.
Good.
Nervous nakedness.
Yeah.
That's what I'm here
it's
for.
The whole point.
So I'm going to give you some choices. You have to make them quickly.
Okay.
And then be prepared to explain your choice.
Okay.
All right, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Where shall we begin? Mitchell, Andrea, or Joni?
Oh, Joni. Yeah. I mean, obviously.
You thought it was a trick question.
I did think it was a trick question.
I could see you thinking. All right, good. So that was just a warm-up.
Okay, good.
All right. Robert, Redford, or Reich?
Redford.
Why?
Because I've had the pleasure to work with him, and he's an incredible man.
Enough said.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary, Clinton, or Duff?
Clinton.
Why?
Because I feel she needs to be our next president of the United States.
Are you going on record?
I've already been on record, yeah.
Okay, good. Sorry, I didn't look at the record.
That's okay.
Carnegie, Hall, or Mellon?
Oh, that's a real tough one. Hall?
Really?
Because I've already been to Mellon.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Good. Nicely done. Yeah. Nicely done. All right. You're adding dimensions to the three-dimensional chess game. Mellon, Water, or Carnegie?
Carnegie.
Okay, that's two Carnegie Halls, so we know where you're headed. Let's see. Spock, doctor or mister?
Mister.
Naturally.
Yeah.
Do I have to go into that?
No.
If you keep doing that, it'll get worse. Trust me on that.
Fair enough.
Gene, Simmons or Kelly?
Kelly.
For more obvious reasons. See, these aren't so bad.
No, these are pretty good.
Core, warp or hard?
Hard.
Hardcore?
Sure.
Why?
It's more exciting.
You're right.
Mm-hmm.
Gay, marriage or divorcee?
Marriage.
All the way.
Yeah.
Levi, Dolly or Zachary?
Zachary.
Why?
He's a good friend.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, I love Zach.
Oh, okay, good.
Dolly Levi, however, will soon to be embodied by the incredible Bette Midler, which I'm very excited about.
You're going to get your opening night tickets?
Oh, you know it.
When she gets to the top of that staircase, man, that theater's going to come down.
Did you see her in I'll Eat You Last?
I did not.
Oh, my God.
Was she great?
Oh, my God. It was so amazing.
Kitty! Is there anything more sublime than hosting 12 of your nearest and dearest for an evening of good chat? That's what we do here. We dish. Who's in? Who's out? Who's on top? Who's on bottom? Who's on top but really wants to be on the bottom? It's the most delicious gossip you've ever heard. I love gossip, don't you? Like I always say, if you can't say anything nice about someone, come sit by me.
Maybe we should play a Bette Midler song in honor of the great Bette Midler.
I almost put From a Distance on my list because in the seventh grade when From a Distance came out, I actually wore out the cassette tape from listening to it so much on my Walkman.
From a distance, you look like my friend, even though we are at war. From a distance, I just cannot comprehend what all this fighting is for.
From a Distance, recorded memorably by Bette Midler in 1991 when it won Grammy for Song of the Year, and probably the same year when my guest Zach Quinto was busy wearing out his cassette recording of it. Now, you may recall that earlier, before we listened to From a Distance, Zach had mentioned that he was learning to play the banjo.
Yeah.
Darn, I wish we had a banjo.
I wish you did, too.
During the tune, my producer Mike Shobe, sensing an opportunity, bolted from the recording studio and down the halls of WNYC to find a banjo. And as it turns out, we share studios with The Takeaway, hosted by the great John Hockenberry. And as it turns out, the great John Hockenberry is a banjo player. And in his office, there was a banjo. There was not, however, John Hockenberry, so my producer spoke to his producer, and we got that banjo up into this booth. And the rest is, as they say, Naked American history.
Played in the bluegrass style.
By an Italian.
By an Italian. I'm half Irish. It's fair enough.
Are you?
Yeah. 50-50, Irish-Italian. See, this is what happens when I get
put on the spot.
Performance anxiety.
You have anxiety?
Well.
Oh, my God. It's just magical.
Only with this. All right. I'm going to play this song. Speaking of a song from my childhood, I'll play you out on this.
Great.
This is a song my mom used to sing to me, and I sing to my godkids, and everybody sings to their kids, I'm sure. But this is a little song called You Are My Sunshine.
Zachary Quinto putting his great American mouth where his money is, or the other thing. Thank you, man. That was beautiful.
Thank you, Julian.
I really appreciate that you did this. Very tender, and I know how frightening that can be.
I was really happy to be here, and it was a joy, and I'm going to go put my shorts back on.
Excellent. Thanks. Could you ask for a better ending to an episode of the Naked American Songbook, Good People of Radioland? No, you could not. But if you think you could, please do let me know by trolling me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Imgur, Reddit, etc., etc., etc. Meanwhile, a heartfelt thanks to Zachary Quinto for sharing so much of his inner musical life with us. If you care to hear and see more of his unique banjo stylings, well, visit our show page at nakedamericansongbook.org or join us for a posting party on our Facebook page. The Naked American Songbook is a production of the Jonathan Channel, WNYC, and WQXR in New York City. Aaron Dalton is our Dr. Bones McCoy. Ellie Smirling is our Ensign Sulu. Mike Shobe is our James Tiberius Kirk, except when he's Uhura. And our theme music was written and performed by me. And me? Well, you've seen the trouble with tribbles. Stay tuned for more Naked American Songbook, and by all means, keep it naked. Always off key, this whistle.
You don't care. We're near each other.
Yeah, we're near each other.
Seriously, one more time, I'm going to get it, okay? One more time, I'm going to get it.
They got nothing but hard drive space in there.
Great, perfect.